The beginning and end of Alexander Hamilton's life are widely known, from his illegitimate birth in 1757 on the West Indian island of Nevis to his death in 1804 in a duel with Vice President Aaron Burr. In less than 50 years, Hamilton grew to become one of the most significant members of the United States founding generation, the young nation's first Secretary of the Treasury, and the architect of what endures as the basis of the American economy. Ron Chernow's new biography, Alexander Hamilton, details the life of the man whose face is on the $10 bill. Chernow says Hamilton's impoverished Caribbean childhood distinguished him from the other founders.
This is just an amazing saga. It gives new meaning, rags to riches, because his biological father deserts the family when he's 11. His mother suddenly dies of a tropical fever when he's 13. He's then farmed out to a first cousin who commits suicide a year later. This is like the ultimate ghastly Dickensian childhood. He then finds himself at age 14 working in a trading house in St. Croix, and he is so brilliant that the local merchants band together. They set up a special subscription fund to educate him in North America. That penniless orphaned clerk at age 17 on the island of St. Croix, through an incredible series of circumstances, 5 years later at age 22, is George Washington's aide-de-camp. This is the only founding father, certainly the only founding father who was illegitimate and orphaned, certainly the only founding father who was born and grew up outside of the United States, and he comes out of nowhere and he just sets the world on fire.
Mm. Here's this man who has views about how economy should be shaped. How did his early life influence those views about how the American economy should be shaped?
Well, you know, it's interesting then, because he grew up in the Caribbean, which at that point was dominated by sugar plantations operated by slaves. He worked in this trading house. He said that job in the trading house was actually the most useful part of his education, because nowadays the Caribbean maybe seems like a kind of tourist backwater and we go there to bask in the sun during the winter. At the time, these were very rich sugar islands, and all of the great colonial European powers were vying for supremacy. So he learned all the basics of accounting and maritime law and commodities and trading in this trading house. And he's also observing all of this great power rivalry at the same time. So it gave him a kind of practical education in business, a sort that among the founders, I think only Ben Franklin would have had. He then combines it with this theoretical brilliance, because he was one of these autodidacts who would just not only devour books, but he would use every moment profitably. Even during the American Revolution, when he had these crushing staff duties, he was lugging these very heavy theoretical tomes from battlefield to battlefield. And in the empty pages of a military paybook, he's taking notes on monetary policy, on population growth, on foreign exchange. And so this is somebody who managed throughout his life to educate himself.
So Hamilton becomes the first Secretary of the Treasury. What were some of the critical things that he did that have had such really lasting influence now on the American economy?
Well, you know, he really has to invent the American government from scratch. To say that he was the first Treasury Secretary doesn't, sound quite as exciting as it was, because he creates the first tax system, budget system, first customs service, the first Coast Guard. He creates the first central bank. And most important of all, we funded the Revolutionary War with debt, so that the country, we were like the third world deadbeat country. We had this immense debt. We had fallen behind in both principal and interest. And so Hamilton had to restore public credit if the United States was going to be able to borrow in international markets. And he felt that it was really the basis of Britain's ability to borrow that was the basis of their military strength. So for Hamilton, his worldview was, in order to be a great power, you have to build military and strategic power on top of fundamental economic power.
Do you think Alexander Hamilton would feel at home on Wall Street today?
Oh, I think that he would. I think that if Jefferson came back, he would be very, very disturbed. This country has very little, you know, resemblance to this small nation of yeoman farmers. One thing that I talk about in the book is that while Hamilton was Treasury Secretary, he created the first bank of the United States, and that bank stock actually traded. The Treasury securities he created actually traded on Wall Street, and there was the first bubble. And as happens with bubbles, the bubble burst. There were speculators. People got ruined when the bubble burst. This is the origin of Wall Street. Hamilton thought he was not, as some of his critics alleged, in favor of speculation, far from it. But he accepted as an inescapable fact of life that you cannot have thriving financial markets without a certain degree of speculation creeping into the system.
You write about Hamilton and have talked about Hamilton being a prolific writer as the author of many of the Federalist Papers. Was his pen his mightiest sword?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this was an orphaned, illegitimate kid who early on figured out that he was going to have to live by his wits, to live by his extraordinary way with words. I must tell you, Leanne, his collected papers, this is a man who died at 49, his collected papers run 27 thick volumes. In fact, the editor of those papers apparently used to joke that he wanted to dedicate them to Aaron Burr, without whose help these volumes would never have been completed. Hamilton was just a human word machine. He was somebody who could toss off 5, 10, 20,000 word memos at will. I said to my friends when I finished the book, I used to think that I was fast and quick as a writer, and I, after 5 years with Hamilton, I just felt like this tongue-tied, blithering idiot.
Hamilton was, you portray him as a pretty stubborn guy and somebody who was really not very easy to get along with, and ultimately it was a fatal flaw. I mean, what was it that got him to that bluff in New Jersey for that duel with Aaron Burr?
Well, you know, he was very charismatic to his friends. He had an amazing number of friends who were loyal to him throughout his life. It was certainly matched by equal intensity in terms of his enemies. I trace it back to the book, the fact that kind of Hamilton outwardly is a very charming, winning personality, but because of the illegitimacy, because of the shame and the darkness of this childhood, which incidentally he never discussed, he was hypersensitive about any insults to his honor. Everyone knows about the duel with Burr. What they don't realize is that there were 6 or 7 previous times in his career where he got involved in verbal quarrels that were so furious that they nearly led to duels. So that Hamilton used what's called affairs of honor, the preliminaries to duels. He used these affairs of honor really the way that we would use libel suits to try to muzzle our enemies. And the only novelty of what happened in July 1804, we're about to celebrate the 200th anniversary of this, is that it was Burr who issued the challenge, and Hamilton suddenly was on the receiving end of it. And I think that that really kind of threw him psychologically to get one of these letters instead of drafting it himself.
Were there concerted efforts to blacken Alexander Hamilton's reputation even further after he died?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that they were concerted, but what happened was that he died at 49. His enemies, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, John Quincy Adams. You notice I just named the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth presidents of the United States were all his enemies. So his enemies won the day. Also, his enemies were gifted with extraordinary longevity, so that both John Adams and Thomas Jefferson in particular, in this very amazing and eloquent correspondence that they carry on until they both die on the same day in July 4th, 1826. An awful lot of the correspondence is full of aspersions against Hamilton. Hamilton, I have no doubt, had he lived, would have written, if not the most perceptive, certainly the most voluminous memoir of any founding father. He was the master of all the literary arts except for brevity.
Ron Chernow is the author of Alexander Hamilton, published by the Penguin Press. He joined us from our New York bureau. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Leon. Thank you.